When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Oh, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to episode 692 of Flow Wrestling Radio Live, World Team Trials Wednesday edish. I'm your host, Christian Piles, joined today by the two baby blue brothers, James Dean Rader and Ben Funky Askren, Ben Kahn from the wetlands of Wisconsin. Ben, what's going on, man?
You know, somewhere out here in the Midwest or Oregon or, you know, with crops and
Hawaii
and ocean and whatnot and stuff.
They used to call it the ocean. They don't call it the ocean anymore.
They don't call it the ocean anymore.
Wow. Okay. So, hey, Ben, I don't even know if you saw it. You maybe have not seen this yet, but we dropped a Jordan Burrow 79-kilogram flow film hype piece last night.
Still like new stuff or what is it?
It's brand new. Yeah, it's brand new.
But is it like you went out and filmed new things, or is it a compilation of like stuff you've had filmed from old stuff?
Some of both, I would say.
Some of both. Okay.
Yeah. So it's good.
It's only like 15 minutes. It's worth the watch.
Yeah.
Dang, you just keep me in the closet over here.
We didn't tell nobody. I didn't even tell JD. He didn't even know we had videos.
Nope.
He didn't even have any idea. So you're not the only one in the dark. Yeah, so please check that out. It'll be up. It's up everywhere. It's free. Free 99. So check that out. I think you'll like it. It's going to go up on the YouTube with the Soriano film and all those. So you guys really like the Soriano. So hopefully you like Burroughs too.
This will be Burroughs' tournament, first tournament not at Nebraska too.
But
in Lincoln.
It's in Lincoln, but he's not training at Nebraska. He left there, 2 months ago now?
Yeah.
Making his home in Philadelphia. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how he performs.
Well, I'm curious, is like Slay, it's gonna be weird for like Slay to be in this corner or whoever it is.
Instead of Manning Snyder. Because it's been Manning Snyder forever.
And they're going to be there like, that's going to be, I mean, the good thing is like it ended on like the best possible terms.
Yeah.
Ever. It was like, it was just time for him to move back if he's going to go another quad. But that is sort of a strange thing. But we've kind of discussed this throughout, as we learn a little more about Kyle Dake and some of these elite wrestlers, like how much day-to-day coaching is going on with some of these elite athletes, right? Like even you with your MMA career, like how much were you running your workouts or how much were you getting like real pointed like instruction on things?
Yeah, I think Jordan, I think he helped like say where the technique was going, but I do think he hands off and he let Manning and Snyder run a lot of his workouts and what he was going to do and let them make the plans. I guess I would be curious to hear all of the other opinions at the high level guys. I think from a technical standpoint, obviously there's very few people as good as they are. So they should have a lot of input, but also at the same time, it's really nice for an athlete to be able to just step back and say, hey, listen, I'm just going to show up at 3:00 today. I trust you. Put me through whatever you're going to put me through. I know you're going to get me where I need to go. Let's do this.
Yeah. And Jordan had mentioned it's like, it's more of a partnership, in a previous interview talking about the Manning Snyder.
He talked about like, I know what my body needs and like that training, but I think like a lot of times it'd be like, okay, well it's wrestling today. So then Manning and company would put him through a wrestling workout. But if he was like, I need to take it easy today, he kind of knew, okay, maybe I'm only drilling or I'm not going hard in the weight room or something like that.
Yeah. Like I wonder, all right, here's my thing. It's like how much were a Snyder and Manning or a Kale and Cunningham watching a David Taylor or a Jordan Burroughs match or a practice and saying, hey, right here, this is the thing we're working on. Work this move. Or is it, you know, just the varying structure at the highest level is, I think that's really interesting to me, because like college wrestling is a lot more, you know, as good as they are, we're putting college kids on world teams and Olympic teams. But it's just a lot more structured. It's a very traditional thing. Whereas when you have the professional athlete, it is different.
And just kind of like I mentioned earlier, from a technical standpoint, these guys are so good. It's not like it's to the point where they're going to make so many mistakes where, hey, you're just wrong on the technique. You really need to stop doing it that way. You need to do it this way. You know, that type of thing, I think would probably be rare. It might be. I mean, even with Keegan, when I work with him this summer, hey, what do you think about this? Here's what I'm seeing. I'm seeing you're giving me this possibility and this possibility. What are you thinking? You know, or what are you looking for? And then let's discuss it. You know, that type of thing is happening once they get to that high level. Because I also want to know what my athlete's thinking, and maybe they're ahead of the curve a little bit on me on something.
Yeah, very, very possible. The high level stuff's really it's interesting to me, and yeah, I like it. I like thinking about it. So, you know.
Yeah, you know what, Keegan, I told him tip of the spear this summer, Christian. He didn't know what that meant.
Tip of the spear. So what? In what context were you using that for Keegan?
I mean, we don't have to go there. Just about creating new technique and thinking about things. And I said, you know, you want to be, ideally, you're going to be the guy that's on the tip of the spear, pushing techniques forward.
Yeah.
And he's like, what does that mean? And I'm like, wait, you don't know what tip of the spear? Like, I mean, he's like, well, I can guess what it means, but he had never heard the terminology.
Yeah, and you were certainly one of the tips of the spear for scrambling in the United States. Yeah. What do you think he could be the tip of the spear for some aspect of wrestling?
He already is. He already is. He's coming home this summer. He's doing some shit. I'm like, what is that? What is that?
Really?
Let me try that. Oh, yeah. There's this one thing he got. I did it to him three times though the next day. I said, what is that? Is good. What is that?
He made it up?
It was a slight change from something we were already doing. It was something we already did, and then he kind of just changed it a little bit, you know? And it's not something like I could go teach him, middle school group or high school group. It's a really high level balance feel type of thing.
Yeah.
But I saw him do it one time. I'm like, wait, what just happened there? Tell me what you just did there. And then he showed me. And I got it on him twice the next day.
All right. You got to give us a little more.
Give it to you. I'm not going to give it to you.
Listen, what?
No.
Are people going to listen to it and then they're going to be, do you really think this is that paranoid? No. You're no different than Kale.
It was from
No more complaints from you.
It's from Underhook Clearing, and it's also like for me to I even struggle verbally. If someone verbally describes a technique to me, I struggle. I need to see it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I would struggle to verbally describe.
Well, you have two wrestling geniuses here. We'll be able to process it and synthesize it appropriately.
It's really good, though. Anyways,
all right, Underhook Clearing.
Yeah.
Okay. Well. Keep your secrets. Secret keeper Ben. Ben's no different than all these other people, you know?
Uh-huh.
Okay. So, good stuff there. And, yeah, I guess we were talking about Jordan being coached by Slay. Coach Slay, we would assume, another Olympic champion.
I would be shocked if it was Slay and Manning or Snyder.
That would shock me.
Really? Why?
Because I think it's
he's like, this is my new home now.
Are
they always going to be in his corner?
I mean, because if you're Slay, then you're kind of really – I mean, if you're Coach Slay in that situation, it's like, all right, well, these are his actual coaches. They've been his coaches since 2009.
But now Slay's been his coach for 2 months now, plus they obviously have a pre-existing relationship. I mean, he should be comfortable in that relationship and say, hey, if these guys step in the corner. I mean, because otherwise, who's the second going to be?
I don't know who else is Roger Reyna. I don't know.
Roger Reyna. Okay.
Do they have any other staff there? Like, is BJ Futrell still involved? I know he's.
He's on staff.
Oh yeah, that's right. He's on the Penn staff, not the Pennsylvania RTC staff, I believe. It could be both. It could be a double dip.
I always find that so funny because for the majority of programs, how many programs actually have totally separate, not the RTC coach is not involved in the college stuff? The answer is not a lot. Like, it's very, very small number.
Well, the Pennsylvania RTC would be an example of that.
With Coach Slay would be one. But even Nittany Lion, like, who's Nittany Lion's coach that doesn't also coach for Penn State?
Well, I would have said Eric Thompson. They have so many people around, though. Like, Mark McKnight's involved.
He's M2. But you can't think Mark McKnight's overruling Kale or Cody or Casey. Well,
of course not. Of course not.
Yeah.
Yeah, obviously, they're not in charge. But, you know, they are coaches. I would say...
How many programs have someone who's actually in charge? Like, I feel like...
Arizona State,
and probably Slay. Probably Roger Rainer probably says, Slay, here's your guys, do your thing, I trust you.
I mean, Dennis is the Hawkeye Wrestling Club head coach, but, you know...
They don't even run a separate practice.
I've not heard that.
I mean...
They certainly used to. Yeah. But maybe not. I don't know. Well, how they... It's a freestyle. How can they do a folk-style practice? They're not going to have...
I heard they made a lot of guys, so they might have like, so here's what I had. They ever in the room at the same time. They might have a couple freestyle guys over here doing some freestyle technique, and then they wrestle live, and they might pull a few college guys or whatever to go wrestle with the college guys. But from my understanding, and I could be wrong, although I believe my sources to be good, they said that there was not like, hey, at 1:30 p.m., this is the freestyle practice. We're going to go all freestyle until 3, and then 3 o'clock, the college practice is going to start. That's what I heard.
Yeah, I don't know. I know they definitely do like separate workouts, privates or whatever, more individually focused stuff. But maybe there is something. Maybe they have everyone in the room at the same time. I'm not sure. That's interesting.
Speaking of which, Ironman and Lugo pulled out of World Team Trials.
So that brings 65 down to 6.
Yeah,
competitors. So no Hawkeye Wrestling Club at the World Team Trials.
That's wild, huh?
I think that's wild.
That's so wild.
They had one guy at the Olympic Trials, Sammy Brooks, and he did not win a match. And then nobody in this one.
It's weird to see.
Why do you think they're doing that?
Well, I don't know why Lugo wouldn't. Anytime you don't see an Iowa guy enter like a trials, I just assume it's for the. Because they're focused on the D1 aspect, right? Which, you know, they're student athletes. That should probably be their focus. So they prioritize that, and then But for Lugo, I have no idea. I mean, I have to assume there's an injury there because what else would he be doing? He's a postgraduate
wrestler.
Yeah, wrestler. So this is his job. So I assumed he would be. Competing, and he beat, man, it's a thin field. So Lugo is someone who really impressed us the last year.
Yeah.
In spite of him not qualifying for Olympic trials, he had some really, really nice moments. So I was surprised to see him pull out. I have to assume it's an injury.
Well, when you look at the field too, Christian, he's beaten Pletcher. I would think he'd be the favorite right now over Heil and Pohlmeier.
For sure.
He was beating Henderson and then got rolled up, I believe.
He looked like he was going to attack him.
Right, and then was it stepped over? Or I don't recall how the match ended exactly, but he got beat there.
I think he was stepped over.
Okay, so, I mean, top three is U.S. national team, which comes with a handful of benefits. So, yeah, you think if he was healthy and able, he would definitely wrestle because there's a pretty solid chance he's taking top three at this event.
But for sure. Is national team the 65 top three yet from Olympic trials?
Oh, that's a good point.
No, why wouldn't they go to the next one? Because all these guys who are bumped up, they're not going to include them still, right?
Oh, I mean, so you're only on the net? I mean, I think probably so, because if you are like, so Jordan Oliver's
we've never
not
had
on
this
the national
before.
Team anymore? Right.
Unless he remakes it, it feels like they got to make it again.
But again, it's like you're on the national team, it's kind of like a year-long thing typically.
Usually. You know, but this year it's only like 4 months. What is it?
Three months on the national team.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, June, July, August. They got 4 months. 4 months.
Okay, that's a good point by young James.
I don't know. I wasn't saying that like I know.
You said it like you knew.
Maybe you could do a double national team because of the extenuating circumstances.
Yeah, get to go to twice as many world team camps.
Double the camps.
Yeah, I mean – They pay for your camps. They pay for some of your travel, and, mm-hmm. and you get a not a good stipend, a bad stipend, but it's a stipend nonetheless if you're on the national team. So there's benefits to being on the national team for sure.
You can get your stipend in Bitcoin, I'm told.
I don't think so.
And didn't some country just approve it as a national currency?
Yeah, it is now it's legal tender in El Salvador as of yesterday.
El Salvador.
Yes, wow. And I think we have Panama.
El Salvador leads the way. Cuba. Wow.
Absolutely. Tip of the spear.
They know what they're doing.
They absolutely are the tip of the spear.
What was the other country? Was it Venezuela?
Venezuela needs to because their currency is inflating at like 10,000% per year. Like you do there not want any Venezuelan currency. Venezuela, okay, Google it. Venezuela currency, Venezuela inflation. Let's see. They had a 438% average from 2017. 438%, Christian. That means if you have $100 right now, it's worth like $20 next year.
That's what's up.
You want some Bitcoin, bro.
This is kind of a wild ride the last week and a half.
Ooh. Maybe it's wild.
Up and then down. It's like, huh. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know about this. Okay. Go ahead, buddy.
I said a cup of coffee in Venezuela costs 1 million bolivars.
That seems expensive. That
sounds expensive.
1/5 the monthly minimum wage for a cup of coffee.
Monthly?
Monthly. It's bad. Venezuela is
really maybe there's just a coffee shortage. You haven't looked at all factors.
Stop.
Okay. So pre-seeds are dropping. We've got Greco. We've got women's freestyle pre-seeds. Don't know when we'll see men's. I would assume
it's got to be today. Let's go.
Got it. Well, they did two yesterday. So you would think, you know.
If they do a Thursday news dump, Christian, I'm going to flip out.
Oh, man. They might do that just to spite you. You talk all this trash on the stipend. Now look at you. Pre-seedless.
I'd say at 10 a.m. Central time.
And you're, yeah.
Right after the show.
That happens so much. Thursday news dump. But that's okay. I have a prediction that we will have something very, very great to talk about on tomorrow's show.
What? Are you keeping secrets from me again?
You did go in on Ben for keeping secrets. That is fair.
Yeah. Until you teach me and Caleb Keegan O'Toole's secret technique,
I'll show Caleb when I'm in Austin in 2 weeks. I'll show Caleb. Caleb will not. He will not have the ability to hit it yet. It's just not going to be there for him. It's not going to be a capability.
All right. Well, then just show him a go behind, and then we'll call it good.
You got that.
Okay.
Sweet.
All right. Nice. Okay. So why don't we get into some of these women's freestyle weights, because a few of them have piqued my interest for sure. Which one are you most interested in? 53 looks downright diabolical.
I mean, yeah, 53 is the deepest. 55 is interesting also, I think. And then 62 is the only Olympic weight that's still being contested, right? So Kayla Miracle won this one. But she did not get a medal, so they got to compete again.
Well, 53, Jakara's weight, is being contested as well, but she's going up. So for me, 53 with Ronna Heaton, Dom Parrish, Lampy, Hedrick, Amy Fernstein, Aaron Golston, Emily Shilson, Aleta Martinez, very, very, very tough weight. Ronna was on fire at trials. Mm-hmm. I don't know if she's the one seed. Would you consider her the favorite, JD? I
think so, right?
I guess. I mean, the run she went on would seem like JD has to do all his research now.
I'm going to go back and look.
Everyone she beat at trials.
It was a run.
Yeah.
It was very impressive. 62 is interesting just because Miracle and Velty, They've kind of gone back and forth for a little bit. Good rivalry there. Grace Figueroa.
Yeah. The other one that's exciting is obviously 72 because you have the two younger women, Kyla Walker and Kennedy Blades. I think it's pretty obvious at this point one of them is going to make the team. Probably everyone, you know, they did wrestle this year. Kennedy won. But I think everyone's really excited to see how – I don't know if you want to say both of them or Kennedy will do – at the World Championships because there's really high hopes and she's super young.
Kylie Walker loves wrestling everywhere. She's doing Who's Number One, too, a week later after this.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Damn.
So, yeah, I think Kennedy versus Kylie is an amazing matchup, but I have a hard time picking anyone on earth to beat Kennedy at 72, unless, like, Tamira decided she wanted to bump up or something. I think it's going to prove out between this weekend and then a month later in Oslo that she is the queen.
You think she's going to win the world title?
Absolutely.
You're calling the world champ. Really?
I called it weeks ago. She's going to win it all.
Dang, Christian.
No. They do not have.
It's not that absurd of a.
I don't even.
That much of a reach.
Yeah, I don't think it's a reach. I think it's going to happen.
But she hasn't competed at the senior. So is it? I'm not saying she's not the favorite, and I'm not an expert on women 72 kilograms. Yeah. But at this point, she has not competed at the senior level, to my knowledge. And so for you guys saying it's.
She made the trials finals.
Internationally.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know who Japan's bringing to the table. I don't know who.
Japan's woman will be good. She's a world medalist.
Yeah.
Okay.
She'll be the main, obstacle.
Kennedy's way. And is Japan even really bringing a good team? I mean,
that's the one they are bringing because she did not make the Olympic team.
I think Kennedy. I think we'll look back in some years and be like, I don't know if we've ever seen a wrestler like Kennedy Blades at this level. I think she's going to be. I think she's going to have that level of. So, like, Helen has probably one of the best examples of, like, really, really elite athleticism with technique. And then I think Kennedy is going to take, like, both of those to another level. Like, her physicality is just, like.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really, really special. And I think her mind, I think she is just like the total package as a wrestler. And I think we're going to see her inner rarefied air very soon, and including this weekend and beyond. So very excited for that. And can't wait to watch her scrap. And you know what? It's like Kylie Welker's right there. Clearly, I think she's a senior world medal threat if she gets on this team, but I don't think she's going to get on the team because Kennedy's there.
For sure.
So very, very exciting stuff, though. I'm pretty pumped. Forrest Molinari back in the mix. She looks to be a pretty big favorite at her weight class, 65. Emma Bruntil, Julia Salata, Ashley.
So Rhonda Heaton got the win over Dom Parrish. She was losing early, came back, got a lead, and then pinned her. With 2 seconds left at the Olympic trials this year.
She pinned Catherine Shai, too.
That's right, Shai.
She pinned but Catherine Shai is not in – she's not in this bracket. But then Alyssa Lampe was at the different weight class, correct?
I don't know.
Okay.
Ben loves to
She was at 50. Well, I couldn't find her for a second because sometimes these track brackets don't scroll down far enough, but I found her.
Got it. Okay, moving on. Do we want to talk? We could talk 65 briefly. There's only six guys, so, you know, not a large bracket.
That is so weird.
It's really strange. I mean, I remember one time junior world bracket, 97 kilograms or 96, whichever it was, in 2014. It was just like Kyle Snyder and Nate Roeder. And I was like, you know what? I get it. It's like, all right, you know what? That makes sense. It's like, you know, you're a junior level guy. It's Kyle Snyder. It's like, well, really? Am I going to go to Madison? No. But this is for our world team. And, well, a big contributor to this is how many people went up to 70. You had J.O. and you had
Zane
go up. You had Nick Lee not enter at all.
That's weird to me.
I mean, anytime they're in college, it's not weird to me.
Yeah.
It makes
really?
Sense.
But Christian, if you were a number six or seven guy and you don't want to train freestyle into October, I get it. But Nick Lee would very likely be the number one seed at this bracket. He would be the guy to make the world team. And when we talk about pinnacle of wrestling achievement in America, making a senior level world team is – it's bigger than an NCAA title. He's already won an NCAA title. Making a senior world team is like as high up there as it gets as far as United States wrestling accomplishments, he would be the number one seed right now.
Yeah, he would be the two. McKenna would be the one. McKenna made the Olympic finals. But so that means that Yanni semi and then McKenna in the finals in likelihood. But these guys are...
Yes, I agree with you, Ben, but it happens all the time, so it is not surprising.
It happens
anymore.
All the time. And the coaches...
Hold on. How does it happen all the time? Because when else have we had a world trials in September?
Well, it happens...
Like U23 trials, junior trial, like stuff like that.
Oh. But who cares about U23s compared to the senior team?
I mean, it's a legit international experience. If you're an athlete with international aspirations, making and meddling at U23s is a really good indicator. You're probably going to be pretty good. And it's just good reps close to the senior level.
I don't disagree. It's prestigious to make the junior world team, U23. But when you compare U23 world team compared to senior level world team,
correct? Of course,
I don't feel like they're in the same stratosphere.
Oh, I don't either. I don't disagree at all. Okay. It's an absolute pinnacle of our sport event, which U23s is not. It's a high level event to be in, but The college coaches, I mean, you do see it all the time. They'll be like, no, you're not going to do this. Or they, you know, they collaborate and they reach the conclusion. Or maybe the guy's like, man, I don't want to do school and be over. International travel and all this stuff. It's like, you know, let me do my last year and then I'll be doing this forever, right? But
sure.
But this is kind of like the perfect year to do it because you're back by October. And NCAAs are in March this year, so it seemed like there's time. But
also, the international field will be down slightly.
Yeah, but like Aaron Brooks isn't here. But not that his weight's being contested, but like he'd be interesting at 92. I wouldn't mind seeing him. But a lot of. I mean, Oklahoma State they're sending Dayton, but a lot of the power teams are not sending. Where's Keegan O'Toole? Enter him at 79.
Yeah,
or 70.
I'm pretty sure if 74 would have been on the table, he probably would have entered. I don't know that he could make 70.
Big boy. Keegan Benetton, that's great.
Yes.
All right, so yeah, it is disappointing. But okay, we're actually going to talk about this weight now. For real. This time it's for real. 65, Yanni McKenna, Pletcher, Hendo, Heil, Pohlmeier. I call him Hank. So... we can kind of fast forward a little bit. I don't see anyone stopping Yanni or Joey in this.
Yes.
So, how much do you expect their previous meeting, which was a really one-sided beating by Yanni, how much of that do you think is reality in their rivalry moving forward, Ben?
The rivalry overall, I would say, definitely skews towards Yanni. That McKenna has gotten some wins. I know McKenna beat Green, and that's a suck down James Green. So, you know, take that with a grain of salt. But then obviously he beat Zane, which I did not see that coming. I don't think a lot of people saw it coming, and so he really impressed me. Obviously I'm leaning Yanni here, but Joey McKenna has continued to get better since the time he left college. And, you know, obviously with everyone moving to 70, he's going to be contending for this team probably in the whole next cycle.
So my thing with Yanni and Joey is what is it about Joey that's made life difficult for Yanni? Well, his position is great. He doesn't make mistakes. And Yanni has a hard time generating offense. Well, if you watch their match from this summer, Yanni is just, there's no elaborate drag, crazy setups here. He's just diving in, getting in deep, and finishing. And he did it like three or four times. Yeah. So part of me wondered, like, okay, well, if Yanni can do that, it's kind of game over because Yanni's a really reliable finisher. And Joey, as good as he is defensively, he's not a guy who's going to like out scramble you when you're in on his leg. It's going to be a problem. So if Joey cannot shut him down from a hands perspective, it's going to be a long match for him, a long two-match series.
Agreed.
But I'm also wondering, like, well, okay, on the one hand, that happened, and Yanni got in on his legs a lot of times and just finished, no problem, and was getting feet to back and all kinds of craziness. But then again, it's like, well, was that the best Joey? Was there just an off day for Joey? Things unraveled, and then he just got beaten down.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to sort of process those things. But the bottom line is, if Yanni can just – if he's able to generate that kind of offense, there's almost no chance for Joey to win. Because you've got to be able to rely on your best thing.
Yeah, and I would say that would be the case just kind of like overall for Yanni. As good as he is, I would still say sometimes he's lacked a reliable offense. And so if he can put a reliable offense to go with everything else that he does, it's not just going to be Joey McKenna that has an issue beating him. It's going to be pretty much everyone in the world, because he's gone with he's gone everywhere. He's beat Bajrang before. He's beat Musakayev. I mean, he's beat good guys at the world level. And I would say a lot of that is without a really solid, reliable offense. Like, you wouldn't say that is one of his strengths. So if he can keep developing that, that's going to go a long way. Not just against Joey McKenna, but against everybody.
Completely agree. Yanni, I don't know. It's like for Yanni's arc, how much better is he going to get at his age, right? Because he's still young in his college career.
Add to that, Christian, that, I mean, a guy like Kyle Dake and David Taylor continued to get better way after their college career.
Absolutely. They did. And Yanni is, I mean, if he's just someone who's pretty obsessed with this, so, mm-hmm. you know, yeah, I can see him continuing to progress. But I feel like McKenna, if I'm Joey, take that match, throw it out, back to the drawing, you know, kind of back to what you do. And really, you've had months only really having to focus on, well, maybe not months, because you didn't know who was going to register. But at this point, for a couple weeks, you know it's just Yanni. It's just Yanni you really have to be super geared up for. And while that's never something that's said out loud, you kind of also know it's like, if I'm going to get on the world team, I'm going to have to beat Yanni. So, you know, I'm going to say on this occasion, Joey is not going to get his doors blown off. It's not going to be that kind of thing. I think if we're going to get back to the old rivalry, it's tougher for him to score. Maybe Yanni gets in more. I'm certainly not going to pick Joey to win 2 out of 3. But I do think it's going to look a little bit more similar to the previous rivalry. But if we see Yanni do what he did to him again, I am super bullish on Yanni for a world medal, too. Because if you can do that to Joey, you can do it consistently. In addition to his other wins, in addition to like what we know about the field, I think Yanni could be the one that ends the drought, for sure.
End this drought, Yanni. Let's do this.
Dude, what if he did?
I mean, it's got to end sometime. It's got to be done at some point. It's bullcrap.
Do you know how I don't know if you've ever had a parade, Ben. I would imagine at some point there's been a parade in your honor. I feel like we should throw a parade in Yanni's honor if he ends the streak.
Where are we going to throw it?
We'll throw it for anyone. I mean, if Hank Pohlmeier ends the streak, I'll throw Hank Pohlmeier a parade. I don't care.
Bajing style.
We got to throw a parade. Flowers. Flowers. We'll throw everything. We'll shower him. What do you think? Are you in on this idea? We'll go back to Rochester, New York, or wherever Hank Pohlmeier's from. Go to their hometown. We'll get a Braxton Amos drive situation, a Yanni D drive. We can do it all. Let's do it big.
Let's do it big.
It's a holiday. It is a USA Wrestling holiday. If we break this streak.
Oh, you're funny.
Okay.
Yes,
I'm not being funny. I want to throw a parade. This is what I want to do. I have goals and aspirations. One of them is throw a parade in honor of a 65-kilogram hero. Are there other – it's funny we talk about 65 so much. Have we ever medaled at 61? Oh, yeah. Joe Colon did. He ended the drought of a brand-new weight class in like 2 years. Meanwhile, 65.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, with 65, and maybe not to get off topic if you want to tell me, hey, let's just keep going on the world team trials, but, like, coming up behind Yanni, there's not anyone like – you saw David Taylor coming. You saw – at the end of his career, you saw Jordan Burroughs coming. You saw Kyle Dick coming. You saw these guys coming along. Is there anyone else at 65? Like, is it Nick Lee? Is Nick Lee going to be the guy? Is it going to be him and Yanni? Is it going to be Jaden Ironman? Like, you know, who's it going to be long term?
You got to figure Nick's in that mix. I'm curious. Does Zane come back down?
Man, I feel like once you go up, there's no coming back. Like once you go up and your body gets bigger, the coming back down is going to be not impossible, but it's going to be really hard.
Perhaps. I don't know. Who else could? Are there any like kind of big 33s even that could grow into? Oh, I know a name. This is a little long. This is a long-term play, but Jesse Mendez.
Jesse Mendez. That's a long-term play, bro.
So hey, you asked long-term. Shane Van Ness, long-term.
Man, I feel like that's. I don't want to say too early to start crowning them.
But... I'm not. They're not crowned. If you're trying to look, I'm just trying to look out.
Yeah, so here's kind of what I was thinking. Like at 65, we've had this weight class where we haven't had a medal since 2006. And we've had, you know, from Brent Metcalf, Jordan Oliver, Aaron Pico. We've had these guys who were like, they were the guys, you know, mm-hmm. They were one of the best college wrestlers. That was Pico, the best, I don't know, high school wrestler. And we've had all these guys. And now, like, this next wave, and Yanni's obviously been one of those guys, as was J.O. and Zane, but now they're moving out of the weight class. So now the only one left there is Yanni. And we still haven't got a medal in the last 15 years. So, like, you know, looking forward, who is it that's going to come in here and get a medal for us?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I think someone in this crop can do it for sure. I don't think we're that far off, even though we haven't done it in 15 years. But yeah, if you're looking, like, if you look at the 141 landscape, you'd think that would be the bringer. I mean, Austin O'Connor probably definitely too big for 65, because I think he's pretty good. Sammy Sasso too big. I'm just trying to look at the collegiate ranks, and I don't know if they have it. Like, I actually think Austin would be kind of an interesting matchup for Yanni if they were to wrestle, but he's going up, so probably won't ever see that.
Yes.
Yeah, I think you literally do have to look at these high school guys. Maybe it's Bo Bassett, you know? He's a nine-year-old Bo Bassett going to come in.
Crown him.
And in 2020, call it 26, he's gonna end the streak. If nothing else.
I mean, it is really kind of funny to think about, but, like, when Olympic cycles last so long, it's like, say by 2028, Keegan, who we think of as someone who's young – like, he's kind of going to be – by 2028, he's an old guy. That's only two more cycles. By 2028, he's going to be 27 to 28 years old. I mean, that's actually probably prime age, but it's definitely not young.
No.
So
no, certainly not.
The guys that are young in 2028 is literally going to be like – they're like 13 and 14-year-olds right now.
Well, it's crazy when you think about – you know, Gable is just like tweeting about Taha Akua at the 2016 Olympics.
Yes.
Like, oh, it'd be amazing to wrestle him. And then – he wrestles him at the next Olympics. Like, so people that are just not on the radar, not that Gable wasn't on the radar, but he wasn't on the senior level radar at that point. We just knew it was coming. So that's basically like Jesse. That's like Shane Van Ness. That's actually older than Shane Van Ness. So that's kind of how you have to think about it. Gable
had not competed at the junior level yet even, correct? 2016, he was still cadet age group.
I think that might be right. No,
he wrestled up.
He wrestled up, even though he was cadet eligible
in 2016. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Because he's about that life.
Yeah.
So
cadet eligible, crazy.
Yeah, I think Gable's still cadet eligible. It's just he's very young.
2016, he wrestled cadets. 2017 was when he was still cadet eligible, but wrestled juniors.
Okay, so 16, he was a cadet world champion. And the next Olympic cycle, he won. So that's crazy.
Bo Bassett, cadet world champion.
Bo Bassett! How many other cadet men's freestyle cadet world champions do we have?
Meyer Shapiro.
Meyer!
He's going to be too big. No way he's 65.
You're right, exactly right. He is big.
He's going out of that for sure.
Yeah.
McGowan, cadet world champion.
Too small. Too small.
You think he won't grow up? Jess Roga is probably going to be too small. McGowan could keep growing.
But to keep growing, I mean, well, I don't know. How old is he?
He's still wrestling.
He's still wrestling at 113, though.
No, he's wrestling at 120.
The Jess Roga? Yeah, I guess it is. Well, maybe. I find it unlikely I see him as a lightweight, not a middle 65. I mean, who knows? Who knows how people will grow? Okay. That was 65. We almost talked about it.
Almost.
Nope, anyone taking
that through it? We got to go to 79, though.
Oh my gosh! Are you sure you want to talk about this weight?
We're going to run out of time. Listen. I think this is my favorite weight class.
Same.
Wait, we already talked about it. We skipped it yesterday. We need to talk about 92 is what I meant.
Did we talk about it?
Yeah, we talked about it yesterday.
We talked about it in terms of...
We talked about everything at 79.
We did it all.
Yeah, we did it all.
Listen, so apparently, grain of salt here. But PD3...
You owe me money on this one.
On what? Nothing's even happened
yet. He's making weight.
I don't know if you think weigh-ins happen 4 days before the event now, but they don't. Also, he has to wrestle. But also, it sounds like I'm going to lose the match. I forget, what did we bet?
I don't know. What did we bet, JD?
I don't remember. We're going to have to go check
the tape. We bet something. I bet he was going to make 79 and wrestle, and Christian bet he was going to do MMA before he made 79 and wrestle.
It's okay. Probably like a billion push-ups.
If he fights me before the thing starts, is that technically his MMA debut?
No.
And then, okay.
Not sanctioned.
Okay. Sanctioned. What if I sanction it?
Oh, for God's sake.
I guess I don't have that authority.
Tell us the rumor. Tell us the rumor that you heard.
So he wants to fight at 170, apparently.
Oh, so that's why he's going down.
This is like a test run at 170.
Well, I mean, weigh-ins and fighting are literally like 36 hours before, so your ability to cut weight is greatly enhanced. Cut weight and recover is greatly enhanced from college and international competition.
I didn't realize. I figured he would be a middle, like a 185 would be like a good weight, but that's a long way. Pat Downey is big.
I also would have guessed 185 would probably be a better weight class because he looks a little bit bigger than me. I could go a little bit lower than 170 if I had to, but not like I could never go down to 155. We'll see this weekend if he makes weight.
If he makes weight, dude, if he wrestles, I mean, Pat Downey versus Jason Nolf, I mean,
I'm so in on that. That's fine.
Mean, That's a crazy match. I mean, I've been dismissive for I think good reason, but you know what? It still could happen. Pat Downey, he can make his second world team. You know, you just never know. So we talked about 79. It is, someone did ask what our favorite weights were, and I am between 70. It is 79 for me.
Really?
Yeah, 79.
I think so.
71 for me.
Yeah, 60. This is going to be so fun.
It's just like there's the Burroughs factor, and it's just like it's not, I don't have to wait all day to watch Jordan wrestle like normally. I get to watch it the whole day. It's just like, for 2 days, I get to watch Jordan wrestle in all likelihood, right?
Yeah. There's a lot of fun matchups here, and there's a lot of intrigue because there's a lot of things we have not seen happen before that we are now going to see happen.
Yes. I'm fixing JD's. JD's having a charger issue, so I'm going to help him out.
Uh-oh. Help him out.
I'm helping a brother.
Okay, 92. I feel like this one is not that fun because when I look at this field, I think it's a race for second place. I still don't feel like any of these guys can challenge Jaden Cox. Obviously, you know, Nate Moore and Colin Jackson. That's funny. Nate Jackson and Colin Moore have been wrestling both really well.
What's the bell?
Nate Moore, Hawkeye legend.
I don't see
Iowa City West.
There's a Nate Moore that wrestled for Purdue also in my era at 197, I think. I don't know a Colin Jackson, though, unfortunately. But I don't feel like any of the 86s, so Miles, Trent, or Drew can really challenge those bigger guys. Sometimes in some of the other weight classes, I feel like the guys that are coming up will do fine. In this one, I don't know why, but I feel like they're really going to struggle. The guys who are not permanent 92s now, like so Nate Jackson was, he was a 79 at one point in time. But he's been up at 92 for a while. I feel like, you know, size-wise, he's fine. But I don't know why I feel like Miles, Trent, and Drew are just a little bit smaller and will struggle size-wise.
Yeah, and Mike Mock is interesting at 92 as well. But I'm with you. I think Colin Moore kind of solidified himself as a bona fide number two in this weight class.
Yeah.
And now, Nate is emerging, right? He's just continues to improve.
He
dominated Kyven, which I did not expect. And he beat Miles Martin at Olympic trials, which he had never, I don't think he ever beat Miles. Miles always gave him fits in freestyle.
Yes.
So this guy, for not that he's old, but you know, to the arc he has in his career is really impressive. So
yes,
but
it's getting a lot better.
It's tough to say to put him in the all right. You're passing Colin Moore. You're in that Jaden Cox conversation now. I can't quite go there. I am down with him as a number three here. Kyven will have his say because
yes.
Kyven went 92. That was certainly the lowest he'd wrestled since he won NCAAs against Kyle Snyder. So that's that's light for him. Now he's he had a rep of it. So is he going to be better this second time? I don't know. Does something like that get easier the more you do it? Because it's not like he did it. It's not like NCAA's season where, okay, I made it for the first time, and then the next week I make it again, and by a month in, or you know, a couple months in, I'm feeling good. How does this sort of, okay, I made it a couple months ago, and now I'm making it again. How does that vary, Ben?
I don't see the way this being an issue for him. Maybe I'm delusional here. I don't think it's a big deal.
Man, I do.
Really?
I mean, yeah. Kyven is big. He's big. He had a tough cut to make 197. I tell this story. If you listen to FRL, you'd be like, okay. But I remember Cliff Keen 20.
It was the year. I think I was there that year. He was running forever.
Ever. No one was there for hours, and he was there running and working out and running and working out. It was just like me, Bader, Tony Rotundo, Kyven, and like some another Iowa State person. I was like, I was like, this dude is just like, do it. And then the next morning he beat Kyle, and then he won the thing. I was like, this dude is ridiculous. So
yeah,
it's a serious wake up because he had made it that morning. So how big could this?
There's also the potential that, I mean, and likely by now he's more mature. He's got his weight more under control. He is obviously a big person, but like there's other guys, like say Jaden Cox, who had a lot of trouble making 97, then went all the way down to 86, you know, and now seems to, he's spoken about it, right? His weight is much more under control. He's much more disciplined with it.
Yeah.
I kind of think Kyven by this point in his career has the weight under control. Not that it's not going to be hard. I'm not saying that. I think he will make it in a fashion that's not going to be like, not like a James Green at 65, right? Where we know James Green makes 65, he's not the same guy. I don't think that's the case.
That's what I'm saying. It's like James making 65 was never in question, and Kyven making 92 is not a question in my mind. It's not about the discipline. It's about how is your body going to react, and I just don't know that it's going to react well to 92. That's my overarching thought.
Yeah.
Okay. So. Go ahead.
No, I was saying, I think even if he does make the weight, I still like I like the top three of Jaden, Colin, Nate. I like that top three.
Yes, I do too. So the potential quarters: Jaden Cox versus Drew Foster, Kyven Gadsden versus Mike Mock, Nate Jackson versus Miles Martin, and Colin Moore versus Trent Hydley. A match I am not sure I ever anticipated seeing. But here we are. I won't put that in the Nolf versus Pat Downey class, but it's not a match I would have anticipated to observe. So, and what of those four looks is the most interesting to you?
Oh, I'm gonna say Colin Moore versus Trent Hydley who thought we were gonna see that? That's mine.
Trent might punch his face. So that would be. That'd be something. I think it's that. I kind of sign me up for Nate versus Miles again. I think that could be. I like to see Miles' response.
Match.
Miles, now it's like the, you know, it's the, what's the Scarlet Knight Wrestling Club versus NJRTC. They had this, they have their fissure now or whatever. So now a little rivalry there. Wouldn't mind seeing that match. Okay. That's 92. Anyone taking anyone other than Jaden Michael Tabori Cox?
No.
So Colin gave Jaden really tough match back in the day, 197 days. They had a 6-4 match. Jaden kind of got tired at the end. Jaden's always been super respectful of Colin, really likes his style. So I think this is an interesting match. maybe a little more interesting than people will give it credit for. And Jaden kind of has a tendency to not let guys hang around, but like second period, it could be 1-0, 2-0 for sure, going into that second period. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Colin maybe not get a takedown, but at least be within the margins in the second period.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely reasonable. That seems to always happen in Jaden matches, that they are probably closer than they could be if you really wanted them to be. Yeah. And, when he was talking about the whole Wrath of God thing, I was kind of excited. But now, we didn't see it in the last couple tournaments, so I don't think we're going to see it now.
You don't think we'll see the Wrath of God?
I was hoping it was going to happen, but we didn't see it, so I'm not going to.
What do you think the tornadoes over the wetlands are? I think that's the Wrath of God.
That would be what Jaden Cox is going to bring. Tornadoes over the wetlands? You're in a lot of trouble.
In Nevada. Okay. Heavyweight, man. This is not the weight I'm most excited about, but it might have the match I'm most excited about.
Really? Of all matches.
It's up there. This series. The fact that we'll get a two out of three. Because we sort of had we had the two matches at RTC Cup. We had the crazy first match where Mason jumped out to an early lead and then Gwiz teched him. And then they had the second match, which was really exciting too, that Mason won after Gwiz wrestled everyone under the sun. Gwiz wrestled Gable there too, right?
Yep.
I mean, my goodness gracious. So I'm excited to see this one. Again, and I may be falling into a trap, the Mason Parrish trap here. I think I'm ready to just like, I'm reading Pantaleo's tweets. I'm remembering the RTC Cup. I'm getting all gassed up for Mason Parrish. He's young. Look at the improvements. Da 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 da. And then I'm sort of like forgetting like Nick Gwizdowski is like a pro's pro. He knows what he's doing. He understands. He was able to, I'm sure he was able to process everything that happened to him at the RTC Cup, and now he's going to have a different game plan. Now, Mason's physicality and just his improvement in offense may be game planable, a la
Ungame planable.
That is a word. It is a word.
Is it really? I'm Googling it.
Absolutely not. Ben, sarcasm filter. Cut your sarcasm filter on. He's in airplane mode right now. So I'm worried I'm getting caught into a Mason Parrish trap here. And I'm getting a little too high on the young buck. When especially, I don't know how two of the three favors or helps Mason. I think it helps.
Man, if you ain't going to lead the Mason Parrish bandwagon, I'm going to lead it. Those matches were 10 months ago. If you think about, say, 10 months before that or 10 months before that, the amount of improvement Mason Parrish has made is totally insane. I like Nick Gwizdowski a lot. But Mason Parrish, he's going to go get us a world medal. Call it right now. And ungame planable is such a bad word, it's not even searchable by Google. Google says there's no great matches for your search. That's how bad of a word that is.
There's no great matches. That's why it's ungame planable. So I think,
I'm still riding with Gwiz.
Ooh, he said it. I alluded.
What are you doing?
I alluded to it, and then but JD.
I don't think it's that out there. He did better than him at Olympic trials.
It's not out there. It's not out there. But I think conventional. I think Joe Wrestling Fan right now takes in all the information, and I bet 70% of people would probably pick Mason in this matchup.
Yeah,
you think?
I think so.
Gwiz just made Olympic Trials finals.
I know.
Mason Parrish lost to Kirkfleet.
But
44.
People's lasting memory is Gable just partying and just like making him look, pedestrian, which is something we've basically never seen with Gwiz. But for me, it was the Zare loss was really the most concerning thing for me. It's not that he lost to Zare. That Zare beats a lot of guys. It's just, I think how he lost is what.
It's too bad they didn't do a second-place wrestle back at the Olympic Trials. I mean, USA Wrestling does it at every podunk youth tournament. The fact that they can't do it at the Olympic Trials, that's discerning.
But it's like the finals is the climax.
Can you imagine losing at the Olympic
Trials? I'm totally joking. I hate the second-place wrestle backs. That was That was my sarcasm.
Although, I can't stand the if you think about it,
okay. I wanted it eliminated.
It could be important for like an Olympic alternate, but.
Well, so they actually do them. If someone is sitting out in the finals, then that becomes the 3-4, which determines the world team member. So they actually do have that. But no, they do it at like all the national regionals and all the Tour of America events.
I love a
and
national regional. Guys,
Don't wrestle in it. It's stupid. We don't participate in second place wrestle back when they're not for advancement. It's stupid.
Ben's made his stand. Don't even try to get
it's
him.
It's so dumb.
I guess it sounds like you got a lot of third place trophies at AWA then.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't steal my kids' medals or trophies. They would keep them for themselves. But so we try to do more winning in the finals than second placing.
Okay. I am predicting a replica Jake Varner, Kyle Snyder Olympic trials version here,
okay,
where the seasoned vet, the savvy, scrappy veteran gets match one, but then matches two and three, too much energy, too much strength, too much focus, too much energy, and Mason Paris gets it done in three over Nick Gwizdowski. That's what I see. I love two out of three. I hope we see a couple go three. What's better than that?
What's better than that?
All right, it's tough to say. Okay. It is 9:12. Do we want to do this this bit, or do we want to go to questions?
Wait, there's some what good bit?
Questions in here. The 133 bit.
Good questions.
Oh, yeah, let's do that real quick.
All right, let's do the bit.
Real quick?
We'll do the bit. Okay. So we're doing the best 33 the past 10 years to never win. 133. We took out Dayton Fix because he has like 3 years of eligibility left.
Yeah, sure.
It would stand to reason he'll probably win one. And, you know, we can talk about it if he doesn't. So here's the list. Proud Virginian, Virginia Tech Hokie, Christian Bird.
I'm getting so annoyed with you because you're so many Bird, of your Blue Demon on this list, Christian. And I think the answer is actually relatively obvious, but you're just going to go off.
3-time VHSL state champion. Couldn't win at 4. Tony Gravely, an Appalachian State and an MMA fighter, actually beat Devin Carter. People forget that. But Devin Carter's on this list. Andrew Hochstrasser, Stefan Micic, AJ Schopp, Joe Colon. This is filthy. Tyler Graff, Chris Dardanes, Tariq Wilson. I'll read them all, I guess. BJ Futrell, Scott Sentez, Andrew Long, Cade Brock is the answer. Austin DeSanto, Luke Pletcher, Mickey Phillippe. It's between Cade and Devin Carter, obviously. Now it's just a matter of who wins that match.
I think it's obvious. So I think there's three guys who are far and away, and it's all because they've had success at the next level, which we're considering, and that's Tyler Graff, Joe Colon, and Stefan Micic.
I thought we weren't considering that.
Yeah, no, man.
I thought we did last time.
No, we did not. We said in their college at their college best.
Yeah, like who these people? It's like, man, I can't believe he didn't win that time.
Well, I would probably still say that about all three of those guys because Stefan Micic obviously didn't. He probably could have competed this year and again next year. Did chose not to compete. Was the number one seed at the Olympics while still having eligibility. Joe Colon pinned Tony Ramos the year that Ramos won.
That Midlands run was dirty. I forget who all he beat.
So dirty,
dude. He beat. Yeah. Listen,
beat Schopp, didn't he?
Yeah, he beat. And he beat Graff in the duel. So the answer really, I joke, and the answer is Devin Carter. But the other answer. Is Joe Colon, in my opinion. Because I think when you look at his just collegiate career, you look at that, just 2013-2014 Joe Colon, he was the runaway, not runaway, he was the consensus number one guy at 133 going into NCAAs. He was undefeated. He had beaten Tony. He had beaten Graff. I believe he had beaten Schopp that year. We could probably look it up. And he lost. I think he got tilted by Graff in the semis, and and then Graff lost to Ramos. So I like to look at who did I think was going to win NCAAs and didn't. I think that's an interesting way to look at it. It's not like who over the course of years accumulated the most stats. It's like no, best to never win is the guy who was at their apex, the highest level that we expected to win, and just didn't get it done that day. I think it's probably Joe Colon.
But hold on. So Stefan Micic was he was the number one seed, right? In 2019, he was the number one seed. He Or is it 2020? Wait, am I getting the years wrong? I don't know.
Probably.
Anyways, he still had eligibility this year. I mean, the chances he would have won this year, I could see him beating RBY for sure. And then he would still have eligibility next year. And we consider that 2019 133 bracket to be one of the best brackets I've ever put together. So true. I think not putting him on this
really.
Man, I wasn't picking Stevon to win that bracket.
Yeah, but that's because that bracket was absurd.
That bracket was absurd. So I'm going to go. Here's my list. I'm going Stevon Micic.
Stop.
Joe Colon, Tyler Graf. That's what I'm doing. Can't stop me.
You're forgetting Andrew Long. Andrew Long is better than Tyler Graf.
Boo. He made the finals at 125, but he never – he was older.
Tyler Graf was a freshman.
Yeah, although he made the finals
Long was a sophomore.
Yes, we didn't even get to see peak Andrew Long, for the record.
Man, we never will get to see it.
I know.
Because he didn't have a discipline to do the right things on a regular basis.
That's a true fact. All right, listen, let me give you the –
Also, we didn't get to see, we only got to see Joe. List? We didn't get to see Joe Colon for the full time because he went JUCO.
Wait a second. All right, hold on. May have breaking news. I think Joe Colon lost to Giant to Julius at CKLV. I probably commentated that match. Just happens sometimes. 12-6. He lost to. Okay, so all right, maybe this changes things. But then, all right, listen to this.
What's the Joe Colon experience?
He beat Tyler Graf. I'm talking about Joe Colon.
You win.
Tyler Graf. Techfold Mark Gray. Not Mike Gray. Beat AJ Shop 3-0. Beat Tyler Graf again 6-3. Oh my gosh. Pinslade Tony Ramos.
Mm-hmm. I'm tired of that year.
Beat Cody Brewer. This is the same year, guys. Then at NCAAs, right, he beat AJ Shop again at NCAAs. And then beat David Thorne, lost to Graf 6-4. Crazy match.
Yeah. And the other thing on some of these guys you're not considering is they had their highest level of success at different weight classes. Is Devin Carter eventually bumped up to 41. Yeah. Hoekstraeten went all the way to 49. Andrew Long, like you mentioned, was in the finals at 125, never in the finals at 133.
And he got third.
Who did he lose Pletcher
to? Hoekstraeten.
He lost to Hoekstraeten.
Yeah. Pletcher obviously was better at 141.
Hoekstraeten was super good. He was never someone I would pick to win at all. But he beat Andrew Long is off the island. You don't get to say what he might have done that year. Yeah. He lost to a guy on this list, disqualified. Once again, Andrew Long disqualified.
You could also say that about Joe Colon. He lost to Tyler Graf.
You could, but had he not already beat him twice.
So which Johnny DeJulius, did he beat Johnny DeJulius?
Johnny DeJulius was so on fire at CKLV. He was in JDJ. He pinned Cody Brewer there in the
finals. Lost to DeShazer there 1 year.
Yeah. I know he got
JDJ too. Just had such He's a dirty. Specific style that I feel like he never evolved his style enough to continue having success. And once people kind of figured him out, then it was not as good for him the next time.
Counterpoint: he was too far ahead of his time.
No. No.
Yeah. So I'll say, man, I still think that version of Joe Colon was probably the best guy. And none of these guys won. They all lost. So.
What do you hate Stevon Micic for?
I don't hate him at all. I just don't think, I mean.
Do you think about my arguments?
Your argument is that he didn't win a really good weight, which doesn't.
And, no, that wasn't my only argument. My other argument was, he would have still had years of, like, this year he had eligibility, chose to compete in freestyle, was the number one seed at the Olympics, big tournament there, would still have eligibility next year. 2020, I'm going to wrestle stat. What was his damn record in 2020 also? No, he was Olympic redshirting, so he had eligibility that year also.
I know, but here's what I'm not doing. I'm not – this is no different than the Andrew Long thing that I'm pointing out.
No,
what
ifs.
I'm not going to say, oh, what the what he would have done – what he would have done, right?
3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Stevon Micic's wrestle stat. You go to Stevon Micic's wrestle stat. It spans 8 years. How is that even possible?
I mean, he may have three presidential administrations that he's wrestled under.
So he had a redshirt year, 2015.
He's on.
Then
I appreciate
an Olympic redshirt year. So he was 17-3 in 2015. Olympic redshirt year the next year. Then he wrestles and takes fourth. Then he wrestles and takes second. Then he wrestles and takes third. Then he has an Olympic redshirt year. Then he has another Olympic redshirt year. And then it would be this year would be his eighth year in college. He would have successfully completed. No, man, I can't believe any man has ever done this. This man has completed four redshirt seasons while in college.
Four? No.
Yeah, 2015, 2016.
Wait, that's oh, a redshirt. Just four redshirts.
Redshirts, redshirt years. He has four redshirts. There's no way anyone's ever done that.
Four redshirts, three Olympic. That's a world record.
All you have to do is just start a global pandemic, get the Olympics delayed.
Yep.
Yeah. So he has a second, a fourth, a second, and a third. Man, and the 2019 year, obviously his only loss was to Nick Soriano. In 2018, obviously he lost to Seth Gross in the finals. Had a bunch of other good wins that year. Who's his other loss? His other he lost to, when he fell apart against DeSanto in the WrestleBacks. Yeah.
Well, they said he shouldn't have even been wrestling then. That's what.
Yeah. Yeah,
Coach Format was
so,
saying.
So I mean, wow, that's I really see it hard. So I mean, if he chooses to wrestle another year, he'll have a fourth, a second, a third, and TBD, I guess, on his last year. But you know, he definitely could have. He would have been in contention to win both of the last 2 years, also.
Potentially,
it's him, guys. It's him.
Man, I can't believe you're so certain. I really think
on that list, it's him.
I think in a freestyle match or a folk style match, I think Joe Colon. I think he's just I think he's probably better. Then again, so if you look at best wins, Devon does have the win over Nick Soriano, which is pretty freaking notable. But maybe the best win.
And Sebastian Rivera.
Well, come on. He made 125 and bumped up. I mean, that I'm not going to count that.
Okay.
Wasn't that was that year, right?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, I ain't counting that.
Pletcher 14-1. RBY was a medical forfeit. Santo lost to Soriano. Yeah, man. Mitch is just good, man.
No doubt. Yeah, you're right. He should be maybe more highly considered. This is one of the. Well, I don't know. I say this because I thought 125 was a little easier, but this is actually a really tough one. I think there's cases to be made for no bits here. Cologne. Graf, Stevon, I think probably those three. And everyone else, there's
Graf's a stretch. For me, it's between Cologne.
Man, man, you look at his NCAA finals against Tony. Like he sort of beat himself in that.
He definitely beat himself. I mean, so it wasn't like he had to get the escape. In that overtime period, because he already had the ride out. So had he gotten ridden out, the match would have continued.
Yes.
So the idea that you're going to put yourself in the danger of rolling there is just a terrible decision to make at that point in time.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a weird one. So, I mean, he's right. He was right there. Okay. Oh man. There's a lot of, I just turned on the YouTube friends. I'm sorry. I've been abandoning you. Been bad friends. Someone said, do they see the chat? Yes, certified hustler. We do see the chat.
And someone said Nick Simmons. Nick Simmons is obviously out of the 10-year window. He's significantly out of it because I think his last year was 2007, like me, because he had an Olympic red shirt in there somewhere.
Yes. Someone said, I'm in school right now. I should be listening to Sociological Imagination, yet I'm listening to Ben. I don't know what that means. Okay.
Yeah, that's a made-up class.
Made-up class, for sure. What's the weirdest class you took, Ben, in college? I don't remember any of my class names.
I took some weird ones.
I would say, you know, and actually I really enjoyed the information that was given to me. But I would say because I had to clear a few prerequisites here and there, I did a couple Russian history classes. That was interesting, but I liked the information.
The best class I took was definitely a World War II class. That was the most fun. It was like the full history. I thought it was fascinating. We had a really, really good teacher. It was awesome. World War II's, yeah. So it's very, very interesting, you know, obviously very sad, but.
I took multiple dating classes.
What?
That's not true.
That's true. Dating in the digital age and intimate relationships.
Stop. I'm all in on dating in the digital age. Let's do that, Klaus.
It was great.
What? Yeah, so what you do on Twinder? You swipe to the right.
Did you just call it Twinder?
Twinder. I never used it.
You never used Twinder? It's a combination
of Twitter and Tinder.
Listen, you can't dunk on Joe Biden if you call it Twinder. I'm sorry.
Damn it.
I'm just saying. Life comes at Twinder. You fast, brother.
They used to call it that.
They used to. You can't call it that anymore. You can't call it Twinder anymore. Wow. Okay.
My favorite class, though, I took it with a professor who was drafted in both the NFL and NBA. It was like sports psychology.
Wow.
And he would just tell stories the whole time about back in the day.
Nice. Just like back not even in interested in teaching you anything.
No, and then just read his newspaper while we did whatever we wanted for the rest of it. Okay. I took multiple classes with him, and that was every class.
All right, so my follow-up to JD after learning he took two classes for dating because his game must be that lacking. Man. What did you learn? What was the number one lesson? You were obviously seeking. You're like, hey, man, just like a wrestler, I'm not good here. I got to go to this class. So you took two dating classes. What did you learn?
You got to watch out for catfishes.
Okay. So it sounds like you got burned a couple of times.
No, we watched Catfish.
Oh, you watched
part of it. It was a whole, like, thing.
Okay, you watched Catfish. Okay, so you learned to avoid. Have you been?
I've never been catfished.
Okay. Well, congratulations.
So class worked.
Class worked. You hadn't been catfished.
Wow. You haven't lived unless you've been catfished. There's this kid on an AWA. I won't say who it is, but all the other kids, and they do it very loudly, so it's not like I'm trying to get into their business. I just can't avoid their business sometimes. Right. But he had a girlfriend from not within Wisconsin, and uh-oh, all the other kids are like, bro, you're getting catfished. Bro, you're getting catfished. And he's like, no, I FaceTime with her, I swear. And then apparently she was coming to town to visit him because it was a serious long-distance relationship. And I never followed up to see what happened or if it was a dude that actually showed up.
Nah, he got Manti Te'o'd.
Oh, my gosh. But did Manti get catfished?
I don't think he got catfished. I thought catfished. It was a fake person. Yeah, because
he just made up a person.
No, that person
was made up a person.
No.
Lene Kakua?
Yeah.
Lene Kakua.
He thought he was R.I.P. like actually dating someone. Or engaged. I think he might have even been engaged.
Man, I'm really bummed that we weren't doing the show during the Manti Te'o era. Actually, Bracky and I were texting about this week and like how much fun we would have had with that story.
That story was
What is the story? I don't even really remember it. He had a fake girlfriend or something?
He had a fake girlfriend who they made a big deal of that she like was sick and cancer. Then and died. But she, Lene Kakua did not exist. That was like her name. She was not so a real.
He had created it at all.
And he was so good. He was a Heisman candidate that year and was playing.
He was
like
a finalist.
Man. Yes.
Yes.
Why did he create it again? I don't even, this like that. I don't remember this.
I don't think it wasn't like, there wasn't like some end game. It wasn't like he was trying to scheme. I think he got tricked and then he like played along with it. I don't know. There has got to be, if Netflix or 30 for 30 is not making a documentary about this, there.
So, Michael Andrews is. In the chat said, Te'o said his girlfriend went to Bishop Sycamore.
The Bishop Sycamore content has been pretty great on the internet as well.
Is Bishop Sycamore coming to the AWA duels?
Dude, I heard they're bringing a really good squad.
Stack squad. Is Joe Colon Stack and squad. Andrew Long on the team? Dude, they got Andrew Long. That'd be epic, and, man.
Kerrigan Conan, too.
Oh, man. I mean, there's
all the convicts.
There's the veteran leadership you need around young people. Just lock up your stuff. That's all I got to say to that guy. All right. Next up, why don't we go to some questions now that we figured out that Devin Carter.
No, wait. Okay. I made my list. What's yours? 1, 2, 3, go.
Cologne, Micić, Graf.
Okay, same three, different order. JD?
Devin Carter.
No, not Devin Carter.
Someone's got to say it.
I really want to go Cologne, but I think I'm going to go Micić, 1, Cologne. Then I go Long.
Listen, the point of college is to get education, and Devin Carter got his PhD. Therefore, he is a doctor, and he wins this argument. So, he has more education than all these people.
You don't know that.
I know. Tell me who has more. None of them.
I'm saying I don't know.
Stevan Micić, he could. Had he been in school this whole time, for all we know, he's a practice. Stevon Mitchell may have a medical practice for all we know. We don't know. He went to Northwestern and Michigan. This is clearly a very intelligent person. He's been there a very long time. He could be a practice. He could have his own practice right now.
Hey, are we sure that he's not wrestling in college this year?
We are not sure. We don't know.
We don't know.
Why would we know?
You guys should know this. I think you guys provide news updates to people.
Some. Maybe there'll be some today. I don't know. Well, I don't know. Maybe some today. Who knows?
About Stevon Mijic?
No.
You messing with me?
No.
Listen, if you need help, give me a wink.
If I need
help. If someone has you in hostage situation right now, give me a wink.
Do I look like someone who's in a predicament? Not at all.
What do you got? What are you withholding from us?
Nothing.
You're withholding something. I could tell.
Secrets are no fun. Well, I can't even clear an underhook now, thanks to you.
Listen, if I taught you the technique, you don't have the balance to hit it anyways. So what's the
Hal, listen. I know I don't have good balance, but I don't understand how you have such intimate knowledge of my balance issues. Watch me walk.
We're talking high level stuff here. Okay, you're just not going to try this. It's going to end very poorly for you. You're going to want to use just a basic wizard technique. Get some weight on the shoulder. Yeah, okay. It's just too many things happening at one time. Your brain ain't going to be able to process all the movements and stuff.
Oh, now it's a brain issue. It's cognitive weakness now.
Listen, don't get me going off on this, but I listened to Lex Fridman and Danaher. Dude, if you are a combat sports fan, you should listen to that podcast. It was so good. But at the end, you know what they were talking about at the end? And I can't believe they didn't bring this up. I'm very disappointed. And actually, I'm going to bring it up. They said it took X amount of years for an AI system to beat a human in chess. Okay?
Yeah.
And so the question, because Fridman does he does AI. He said to Danaher, he said, how long would it take? So say we take the strength out of it, right? Because you can make robots uber strong. How long would it take to technically program an AI to beat a human in jiu-jitsu? So I take that to be similar to wrestling, right? They're cousins. And the point they didn't bring up, which I thought was really, I don't know how they missed it, really bad. The chessboard, right? You can move from here to here, right? Or here to here, wherever. You can, and it's a move. It's a move, and the move is done, and there's no other ways to do the move. But with wrestling or jiu-jitsu, there's so many other factors involved in the move. Like, if I'm shooting a single leg, am I here? Am I a little lower? Am I a little lower? Am I shooting it at a more curving angle? Am I going straighter? Am I shooting with full power, or am I taking a little power off of it? You know, like, there's just so much balance and force and vectors in there that, like, how would you teach this robot to feel? I mean, really, in a real match, you have to feel all of those forces coming at you in real time and make power adjustments about where you're putting them. So while there may be one move, a single leg, there is almost an infinite amount of ways to hit that single leg with power and direction. And then obviously then you add in finishes and we can keep going down that loop. And it just adds so many problems.
Yeah, so I'm
a nerd, sorry.
One of the biggest differences, no, this is great. I think one of the biggest differences between you and those two is like you are a high level practitioner. John is a teacher and Lex, and I know John probably has deep intimate knowledge of all that stuff, but I think you probably think about it at a different sort of level.
Well, I don't know, but when I listen to John talk, he's so he's brilliant. He's really, really intelligent. Yeah. I obviously got to interview him when I was at the Who's Number One, when they did the wrestling by the Who's Number One Who's Number One Jiu-Jitsu by the Who's Number One Wrestling.
Yeah,
but they just didn't bring up the balance factor. And actually, when you watch, so he works with, I think it's called Boston Robotics. And when you watch those robots, even just do like basic walking and jumping, they're kind of like dumpy looking. Like, yeah, they're rigid. They don't move that well. Kind of like sometimes you have a brand new wrestler come in and you watch him move and you're like, wow, like this guy's never, you know, he struggles with, say, a cartwheel or a forward roll. Like they just don't understand the way their body moves yet. And then if we're talking high level wrestling, all of these things, they happen so subconsciously. You know, and this is like we're talking about this wizard situation. You know, there's like four different things happening at one time. You're moving this way and you're moving this way and you're moving this way. And there's, you know, different parts of your body moving different directions. And obviously there's other input coming in, right? The input is, what is the other wrestler doing? Where is their pressure going? And I have to, in real time, adjust my motion based on what his motion is to make my move work, you know? And so like, how do you input that into an AI system? I think that would be, I don't know the answer because I don't work with AI systems, but I find it to be a fascinating topic. And they didn't bring up that balance real-time component of the pressures that are coming in from your opponent.
Yeah, I think chess versus combat sports is so different.
So different.
Then again, but like in a fight, you can't really hurt a robot, right?
Well, yeah.
You should be able to
I'll mess a robot
up. Well, I think you would have to. I think what they were talking about is the actual sport of it. So if you were to get the robot in a rear naked choke, the robot would say lose the match because although you can't choke a robot because there's oxygen, you would have the hold that would secure the win.
Yeah, pretend it's like a dummy, like a human-looking robot.
Yes,
got it. Okay, let's get to some questions. That is interesting. Fascinating. Yeah, I'll probably check.
What
it
was
out.
Their answer?
They just, so I mean, what John Danaher talked about was, so he actually, the angle he went with it was, what if you could increase, so he talked about the amount of moves that the computers can move through in chess and how now in chess, humans can't even come close to computers because the computers can generate so many answers per second or whatever. So he said, what if I could put that into Gordon Ryan's brain? Right. And allow Gordon Ryan to simulate more moves essentially with the body he already has like that. He said that would be the most effective. So they talked about that. And then they just talked about how effective computers were at learning chess because of the way they could run through all of the moves. But yeah, they didn't really talk about the balance and power component of, you know, learning combat sports. Cause I talk a lot to my higher level athletes about this. It's like at a high level, man, a single leg works. At a low level, a single leg works, right? So what's the difference between a high level single leg and a low level single leg? Well, it's your opponent's going to be giving you significantly different pressures and you're going to have to react in real time. You're not going to have time to think about, oh, when they sprawl this way, this is what I do. It's already too late. We're already done. We need to have our brain programmed. So when we hit the single, we feel the pressure, boom, we're gone, right? Or when we snap them down, we feel, are they coming too far so I can run behind them or do I need to bounce them again, right? So when we're in real-time wrestling, we have to make these decisions subconsciously. We're not going to have time to consciously think about what's going on. We have to feel them. So in practice, we need to think about the way our body's moving and how we react to certain things coming at us. And then that way in matches, boom, we're just subconscious reaction over and over and over again.
Got it. Made me think, Ben. Yeah, I know. It's great. Big brain, Ben. All right, let's get to some questions. Kurt Arnoldson, did Ben read The Sports Gene? Thoughts on it? Does this study change his thought on video games? And I'll read the quote here from the book. Let me read this. It'll be good context. Some rare athletes do have superior reaction speeds. In a 1969 test, Muhammad Ali reacted to a light in 150 milliseconds, near the theoretical limit of human visual reaction time. There's some evidence that playing video game may improve contrast sensitivity somewhat, but they'd have to be action games. A relevant study found that Call of Duty 2 helped, but Sims 2 did not.
Yeah, so I mean, it's funny because it's saying in the same time that, you know, certain people are above others talent-wise, but probably at the time they're testing this, Muhammad Ali is somewhere in his 20s, I guess, so he's had a lot of life lived already. And he's
playing a lot of Call of Duty.
Well, I mean, obviously there's some video games in his time, but he started boxing at, I don't know, 12 or 13. So he has been boxing for a long period of time. So he's had time to work on his own abilities. And then they're also saying in the second paragraph that there are certain things you can do to improve your abilities. And so I know this study. I can't cite exactly or give you the bibliography of it, but there's a study about high-level table tennis players at which they thought the same thing here, that they have more superior reaction times. And so essentially what they do is they put them in software that tracks and just right out of left eye lights up, and then they start to touch the buttons based, you know, and they figure these guys have much superior reaction times. And what they found was there was no discernible difference, you know, from a mathematical perspective.
From what? And from like a normal person or from a high level athlete?
From normal people. Yes. I mean, there's obviously, it's a bell-shaped curve, but when you just plotted the high-level table tennis players versus other people, it was no real difference. And then, so, you know, when what they found to be the factor and why they were so good at what they did was ability to predict. So then they put eye tracking software on athletes. And so in table tennis, for example, the really high level athletes are watching, I guess, the elbow and wrist movements, because that is predictive of where the ball is going to go as you hit it. I'm not great at table tennis, so I can't tell you this. Yeah. But this is kind of come with wrestling, is like subconscious predictive feeling where they're going to go ahead of time. And the knowledge base you have helps with that. Whereas low-level table tennis players are watching the ball, and the ball only tells you where the ball is right now, but it doesn't tell you anything about where the ball is going to go. So a high-level table tennis player has it whittled down to like, okay, they're going to go, you know, the ball is going to be over here somewhere, whereas a bad player, you know, it could end up anywhere. I have no idea where the ball is going.
Yeah. I'm the self-proclaimed king of the castle of ping pong of flow, and I lost to Spay last week. I don't know if you know this, JD. Ooh,
I did not know
this.
Spay's gotten a lot better.
It's kind of made me question everything. I know Kozak's emerging. There's a guy named Jason who is certainly a
emerging.
Rival. Yeah, it's been a rough 2 weeks. I feel like the previous months I've
beaten Spay
at an all-time high. Yes, most have beaten Spay. Bracky and Spay had a rivalry that was all-time because they are two very well. Bracky's a very bad loser, but Spay gets really frustrated. It manifests in very different ways. I will say. And it's a little more entertaining. But maybe it was just Bracky that really brought it out of Spay, because I don't see that with JD.
You need to find Bracky tactics to get him off his game.
No, I'm listen. It's not going to happen again. That's it. He's cut off. Bracky actually texted me. He's listening, apparently. He said, it's debatable on whether or not Manti Te'o was in on it or just got catfished. So we don't know. We would have to ask Manti.
If you get catfished, that would be hard to admit that you got catfished.
It'd be tough. Yeah. It never happened to JD. He doesn't know anything about it.
That's right.
So if you're a dumb college kid,
to take two classes.
If I just keep lying, they're never going to find out that I got catfished. I might as well just keep lying.
Yeah, I guess so.
That's what he did. And then he got caught.
All right. Well, why don't we get the heck out of here? It's 9:42.
You got tacos there or what?
Probably all that. Listen, they order so many dang corn tortilla tacos.
Whoa, I will terrible. Not stand for corn terrible. Tortilla slander on this podcast.
Jason, my ping pong nemesis, was like, come on, what's the big deal? It's corn. He ate one. He's like, that is literal garbage.
I gotta go fight
corn
Jason.
Corn tortillas are better. If you don't like corn tortillas, you're too much of a white boy.
You have a child's palate.
White boy. We're getting racial.
White boy, go back to Virginia.
I might go back. You can't stop tacos. Me. I might go back to Virginia. I know where I'm going before then.
Flour tortilla, son of a gun.
I'm going to Lincoln, Nebraska. I'm not going to be doing whatever it is. Ben's doing a camp. Oh, wow. I'm getting a lot. Let me coach wrestling moves. Like I didn't have opportunities. Like I couldn't be coaching, teaching people some spladles or single legs. No, I'm going to do
underhook defense away.
World trials. I'm going to teach underhook defense to the World Team Trials competitors. Thank you guys so much for listening. This was fun, at least for me. If no one else, it was fun for me.
I had an enjoyable time.
Okay, Ben, put Ben down for an enjoyable time. JD didn't get catfished the entire show. It's a win across the board, people. See you tomorrow. Goodbye.
All right, peace.